It is Saturday, February 16th, 2008, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, a bit about the week in geek news and your questions and comments of technology.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
We are trying a new theme today, D-Surf Na by Ebu Go Go. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between the geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Timothy Jordan. Lyle Troxell is ill. Please keep in mind that the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today we are covering the geek news of the week. During the second half of the show, I will welcome you to join our conversation. You can ask us anything. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll free at 800-655-5877. Or go to geekspeak.org right now to send us an email. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about half an hour. Monday morning on Talk of the Bay, The Routes of Rhythm, how a sacred drum and dance form made its way to Africa and the Americas. KUSP's Robert Pauly talks to anthropologist Debbie Klein and percussionist Michael Spiro about Bata music, a centuries-old tradition that lives in Nigeria, Cuba, and Brazil. Monday morning at 10 a.m. on KUSP. Geek Speak on KUSP is supported by Henry J. Ramirez DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry using digital technology for less radiation and offering one appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. This is Geek Speak. Filling in for Lyle Troxell, I'm Timothy Jordan. In the air room with me are the geeks. Starting with Sean Cleveland, Senior Technical Marketing Manager at NVIDIA. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning.
Miles Elam, geek student of all, master of none.
Good morning.
And Ryder Brooks, support engineer at Sun Microsystems.
Good morning.
Hello, geeks. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Thanks for being here.
Always a pleasure.
So first off, the week in geek news. Miles, I'll start with you.
There's been some question as to where the iPhones have been going.
Where now, have they been going?
Well, obviously, both you and I have iPhones, and many of our friends have iPhones. But the number of iPhones sold that have plans with AT&T or with overseas carriers that have been licensed through Apple does not match up with the number of iPhones that have actually been sold. And it turns out a bunch of them have been that have gone to the Middle East, and in this case, they're estimating that 400,000 cracked iPhones, in other words, phones that have been that can be used on alternate carriers, can be found in China. And with this comes from the telecom carrier in China, China Mobile. Mm-hmm. And this is becoming a big issue of Apple gets a fair amount of revenue from the monthly service charges for these iPhones. For example, from AT&T, they get a kickback, a certain like $18 per month, something like that, of your bill.
Which times 400,000 is kind of a lot.
Right. And at the same time, what is China Mobile's incentive for paying that money off to Apple? The phones are coming in anyway. So what's the point in never having a legitimate carrier in China becomes the question.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that China does not have the same set of laws, it becomes a bit more freewheeling than it is here. Probably Apple does not have the same leverage that they would have in the U.S. or in Europe.
Okay. So now if you get an iPhone in China, you could get a quote-unquote legitimate carrier at this point?
No, there are no legitimate carriers.
So there's no...
Apple was in talks with China Mobile, but once again, Apple gets a kickback for the monthly charge.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas China Mobile is probably balking at that, saying, well, why should we give them a kickback when we're getting the money anyway for people using iPhones that are cracked on our network? For them, it's pure profit.
Okay. I'm trying to wrap my head around all the international politics on phones. I mean, it's sort of a strange thing for a phone manufacturer to get a kickback on a plan to begin with, right?
At the same time, Apple iPhones have been selling like hotcakes. So
let me get this straight. AT&T's they're already outrageously expensive, and Apple gets more money on top of that from the service
providers? Outrageously
providers?
Expensive? I can think of things like the Nokia N75, things or 95, that are much more expensive. Certain models of Sony phones are much more.
That doesn't. That's beside the point. They're still expensive. Yeah, you can get a good cell phone for $100. Geez, you can get a cell phone for free.
Yeah, but you can't
browse the web on
them.
I mean, it's definitely a premium product. I think we all recognize that the Apple products in general are sold at a bit of a premium.
I would be much happier if they provided a battery that you could swap out occasionally.
Sure, yeah. But at the same time...
For a $400 phone.
Right, but at the same time, my battery hasn't failed yet, so who knows? Maybe it's good battery tech.
Yeah, but what do you do if you're like you're out in the boonies and you know you don't have a charger and you've got like you know an hour left and
you know I just
that's actually an
you have to have an
point.
Extra battery, right?
Yeah. I came across a YouTube post. I'll have to look up the URL some other time. But someone taking the solar panels from the outside garden lights because they're really those little outside solar lights are really cheap. Took those out. Took a baseball card sheet, plastic sheet. Put them in there, wired them in serial, and got 5 volts out that you could plug in to a USB port. So you're able to charge a cell phone or something similar to that that has a relatively low voltage, low amperage, and use it.
So
and there you could use it anywhere.
They're transferring power from the sun into their iPhone.
Exactly. Well, in this case, it was a different cell phone type, but yeah.
You know, I generally, if I find myself out in the boondocks or perhaps on the road or in a theater, as I often find myself away from a power outlet, I'll just plug my cell phone into my laptop. I generally carry 2 or 3 extra batteries for my laptop, and so I'll just transfer power from there into my phone if I find I wasn't able to charge it the night before.
I guess
but
there are
Ryder's
aftermarket.
Correct. If you're off in the boonies, though, if you're off hiking in the mountains, you may have your phone with you,
but you probably wouldn't have your laptop.
Yeah. I mean, there are definitely ways around it. I mean, Apple has always had their, you know, accessory market where you can plug in a bunch of AAAs or AAs into the docking station and it recharges it on the fly. I mean, I guess you could do something like that. But I'm not, for the price that you spend to not be able to have, you know, your Batman accessory belt of batteries to slap in there, you know, it kind of bugs me.
But Alex, our geek in Southern California, saying online that there are also external battery adapters. You know, the extra batteries that you can plug in to extend your cell phone time, those are available for the iPhone as well.
Yeah, and I've seen those
for
iPods
that you can plug into
a
USB.
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, well, we've gotten a little off topic on the iPhones here. I mean, there's so much fun to talk about, I have to say. But essentially, there's a lot of missing iPhones, and this is really should be driving Apple to get a legitimate carrier. Out there. It's really
well, one of the things about the U.S. is that there is only one legitimate carrier, AT&T. Everyone else, people who are using with T-Mobile, for example, are using a hacked phone, which means that if anything goes wrong with that phone, they don't get any service. Their warranty is invalid. And that's the case in China. Anybody has a problem with their phone, they're out of luck.
But people are still buying the phones and still hacking them because they really want them over there. So Apple should just make the deal already and get that extra $18 a month per phone.
Despite the fact that... You know, as Sean says, they're a premium item.
All right, so let's move on. Sean, what's the deal with this whole HD DVD thing? Can you still buy them? I mean,
yeah.
But for how long?
Not much longer. Everybody seems to be going on the Blu-ray wagon, jumping on the Blu-ray wagon. Netflix has said they're going Blu-ray only. Now Walmart has said they're going Blu-ray. And Toshiba has already announced that they're going to be getting out of the HD DVD market. So I wouldn't expect those to be on the shelf much longer. So if you're going to buy an HD player, yeah, I would recommend Blu-ray. Unless you like to waste your money on a dying platform.
So is Toshiba officially announced that? I thought that was just like an internal leak that somebody was suggesting that they were going to.
Well, you know, I don't know why they would make hardware for a platform that nobody's going to be buying or nobody can buy because nobody will be selling them.
So, I mean, they definitely have to look forward as far as manufacturing goes, is what you're saying.
Right.
Yeah. Unless you absolutely positively have to have that Universal produced movie in high definition today, yeah, which is only available in HD until they re-release in Blu-ray.
I guess that's true, yeah. But studios are already announcing that they're going to re-release movies in Blu-ray.
Right.
That up said, to this
was,
point, yeah.
Yeah, I was being sarcastic.
So Sean, how did this start? What was the death of HD DVD? Was there a point where it was just like, oh, this is going to happen? I mean, aside from, you know, the little quirks about each format, which is better and which is worse, was there a defining moment? Was that CES?
Oh, I think the industry's realized they have to get behind one format. Few people are going to spend the amount of money it takes to be an early adopter for HD. Very expensive to mm-hmm. buy a player. The movies are twice as much as DVD sometimes. You know, it's a lot of money to get into this. And you need a special TV, a large screen TV. But, you know, a lot of people were holding off because they wanted to see what was going to happen. One's got to win. Frankly, I was not happy that DVD Plus R and DVD Dash R both ended up coming out to the market. So you've got DVD players now that do or you know, DVD burners that write to both types of formats. And when you go to the store now, there's twice as much shelf space dedicated to DVD media because you've got the Plus R media and you've got the Dash R media. Do we really need that? No. You know, so I'm very happy to see that one of them is failing. The sooner the better, in my opinion. I'm happy that it's Blu-ray because Blu-ray has more density. I care about internal Blu-ray burners for my computer so that I can back up data. And otherwise, I mean, there's a lot of pluses and minuses between the two formats. Supposedly, the plastic on the HD DVD is a little thicker, and you would think, "Oh yeah, well, it's more resistant to scratches." But the truth is, the Blu-ray has a stronger plastic, and it is more resistant to scratches because the thicker material on HD DVD is actually softer. There's a lot of things that go back and forth between these formats. People say HD DVD's got superior audio, but you know, Blu-ray, that's just,
yeah, past
it's
CD
just
quality,
as good, you know?
I mean, it's really hard for the average person to hear.
And then other people will say it's just not true. I don't know what, you know, where we stand with that, but
I've heard with HDMI 1.3, I don't know.
Yeah, with HDMI 1.3a, you've got, you know, true HD audio support, uncompressed.
That's the connector that you would use between the player and the TV,
I mean,
right?
With the right hardware, I don't think it makes a bit of difference.
Okay. Now, something on this...
Something that I do find really sad, though, is things like the HD DVD spec was region-free, meaning if you bought a movie from overseas, it played just fine, whereas Sony is region-encoded just like existing DVDs are, that it was possible that the copy protection was optional with Blu-ray. It's mandatory. Well, things like that.
That helps explain why the industry wants that, you know. The movie producers, I mean, they get more sales that way.
Sure. It explains why the movie producers wouldn't want it, but not necessarily the consumer market. No.
And then there are special features on HD DVD. I guess HD DVD movies would come dual-sided so that you had the original DVD version on one side and the HD DVD version on the other. So that if you didn't want to upgrade, you could just play the DVD movie. And when you upgrade to HD, you just turn the thing over and take advantage of
that. Actually brings
the
up
the high resolution.
An interesting
That's kind
point.
Of cool.
Yeah, there's a class action lawsuit against Samsung because of a so-called defective Blu-ray player because of different profiles. There's more than one Blu-ray spec. There's Blu-ray 1.0,
actually,
1.1.
You know, it's funny. I talked to Bob DeMoulin at Sony this past week about that. The fact that Blu-ray has these incompatibilities with new media coming out and the fact that, like, Ratatouille is...
Or the special features, yeah.
Yeah, required you to upgrade the firmware on your Blu-ray drive. And when as they announced these new Blu-ray 2.0 specifications, there was rumors that the existing Blu-ray players wouldn't support them. Only firmware upgradable players like the PS3 and internal burners... you know, had the capability to be upgraded via the firmware. And the truth is, at least with Sony, all of their Blu-ray players can be firmware upgraded. And it's not an easy process. You've actually got to burn a DVD on your computer with the firmware, and then you put it in your Blu-ray player, and you have to do some sort of a special button push. But you can update the firmware on your player, so you know, don't make that a barrier to your, you know.
Well, it depends. The Samsung model, yeah, you can't. And that was the idea, was that the Samsung model was the cheap one that everyone could buy, because the Sony standalone players are much more expensive.
Yeah.
Sony products are generally very, very expensive. Right.
Whereas every HD DVD player that I'm aware of on the market, for example, by Toshiba, is firmware upgradable. So even when they make changes, that you can update your player, you're not just left out.
So it's not all of them, but it's too bad that Samsung decided to do that.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
So that's good to know. I guess in programs past, the word has been a word of caution to wait and see how things have sorted out. But what I'm getting now is things have sorted out. So the only word of caution is which player you buy that supports Blu-ray. Hopefully, you, when you go out to buy one, purchase one that can be upgraded or has the latest firmware. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah.
Yeah. At this point, probably we'll get more vendors, you know, manufacturing Blu-ray hardware, and more competition, and prices will hopefully drop.
Yeah. What about the technology, though, for upscaling? Like, there's the upscaling for standard DVD to make them appear sharper.
Mm-hmm.
Like
I've heard mixed reviews about upscaling. Some people think it's okay, and some people think it looks worse than just a DVD player. But I haven't heard anyone say it's better. It's better than my original DVD.
I've got a Samsung upscaling DVD player that uses the Faruja chip, and that chip is amazing. And I see the difference. But
So the upscaling adds to the regular DVD quality, is what you're saying.
Yeah, it doubles the lines. So if a typical DVD has 480 lines resolution, you know, the fact that you can double those and even increase them all the way up to 1080i, it makes a difference. Otherwise, you would have a bunch of stretched pixels.
Do you see a huge difference between that and the HD DVD or the Blu-ray content that you have? I mean, is it a big enough?
Oh, God, yes. Night and day.
Really?
Yeah. Blu-ray to me, it's photographic. It's incredible. It's better than the HD signals you get on your television set, you know, through cable and on air, over air.
Well, that makes sense because those are highly compressed.
Yeah, so those are compressed. I mean, it really depends on the title. But geez, even with the worst titles, I see the difference. The Blade Runner Blu-ray disc was jaw-dropping. You weren't there at where was it? We had some sort
of a sloth party. Yeah, you were there.
Were you there for that?
Yeah, but you
were in the other room, Miles. You didn't see it. I put it on TV, and everybody just went.
No, I've seen the Blu-ray content before. You played it before.
You didn't see it. Blade Runner that day.
You got to see Blade Runner. Apparently, Tears in the Rain and all that.
Because they spent a lot of money on that particular title.
But at the same time, I've bought Blade Runner so many times, I just can't bring myself to buy it again.
We got to move on. You're listening to Geek Speak, filling in for Lyle Troxell. I'm Timothy Jordan. With me in the A Room are the geeks, Miles, Ryder, and Sean. Ryder, how you doing today?
Doing pretty good. Okay, I got an interesting little tidbit. We've covered this in the past. There were issues where Comcast had introduced some hardware bandwidth shaping throttling technology using Sandvine, which was a hardware device that would basically sniff out traffic on the Comcast network, and Comcast subscribers would have difficulties seeding files over the BitTorrent network. This has been kind of a pain in the butt for a lot of people that use BitTorrent on the Comcast network and other ISPs as well that have also implemented similar technologies. And essentially, you're unable to seed stuff out, files you can't share with other people. And, you know, yes, there is, concerns about, you know, Comcast wanting to be able to manage their network and not have their upload bandwidth out to the internet being saturated with people sharing illegal files and whatnot. But, of course, there are legitimate uses of the BitTorrent network. Lots of corporations do use this technology for sharing legitimate files. And anyway, there is a new proposal in place by several BitTorrent developers to get around this limitation that the Sandvine technology has imposed on it. And it essentially involves creating an extension to the BitTorrent protocol that they use for peer sharing and passing traffic back and forth. It's pretty complex. There is a proposal online. I'll put the link up So those interested can take a look. But the bottom line is that they're adding to what they call peer obfuscation. And they're basically enhancing the encryption used for detection between a peers sharing a file and information, and making it much more complex for the Sandvine hardware to detect it. And so far, they think it will work.
So my brother has Comcast internet, and he ran into this problem. Mm-hmm. I remember getting a phone call from him 6 months or so ago and saying, "Hey, you know, I can't use BitTorrent anymore." He does peer file sharing for a number of different things, and all of a sudden, like, it just wouldn't work. He'd sign on, he couldn't download, he couldn't mm-hmm. share. It just, nothing would ever actually move. And you know, it was frustrating because I had to turn around and tell him, it's like, I have no idea, but likely you can't do anything. But it sounds like soon he might be able to do something.
Yeah. Now, the Sandvine technology, this level, it's basically hardware. What it does is it sends reset packets to those that are actually seeding files on the Comcast network. And it doesn't interfere with your ability to download torrents, but it does affect your ability to share them to other people.
Yeah. Or rather, and some Comcast networks. He wasn't able
to download at all.
Yeah, and there are different bandwidth shaping techniques that they have in place. That's a bit unusual. I haven't had the experience where I couldn't download anything. You know, that could possibly just be a limitation in what files he's trying to get and who's actually sharing them. You know, if say everyone else was on a Comcast network that was sharing that one file, then they can't seed it. So you might have the torrent file, but there's nobody to get it with. And in theory, Comcast says that Comcast subscribers can use it internally with other Comcast users. But determining who that is, I have no idea. But kind of exciting news in the BitTorrent world. For me, I'm looking forward to this. Basically, hopefully, it'll just be a software upgrade for whatever BitTorrent client that you use, and it should be backward compatible. So if other clients are not using the technology, it'll just revert back to the older protocol.
Yeah.
Geeky excitement in my world.
And the uncomfortable silence that follows.
I think the important thing to note is that it is sort of, at its core, a really geeky issue when it comes down to it, is that Comcast is sort of judging certain types of internet content, wouldn't you say? I mean, it's not really, like, I think you can easily make the case that certain types of traffic should be given priority, like IMing. When somebody sends you an instant message, you want that to arrive right away. Mm-hmm. Whereas a process that you expect to take a long time, like downloading a torrent or uploading a torrent, could take a really long time. But I mean, the way it was going on some of their network for a long time, as the Electronic Frontier Foundation investigated it, is that they were just blocking them.
Yeah,
but that kind of judgment is.
Yeah, they were saying that they were delaying traffic, which was not the case. They were preventing traffic from occurring.
Well, yeah. They probably tried to stop it, but they weren't completely successful. So that's why they were saying delaying.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've tried other techniques. I mean, there's, you know, ISPs have always done some sort of bandwidth shaping and throttling of traffic, but there have, you know, been mechanisms to basically encrypt the traffic so you couldn't detect it and get around it. So this was their ultimate solution.
But is the issue really, at least for them legally, is it the point that they are stopping their customers from getting certain content, or is it the fact that when they're sending out these packets to kill the connection, they are spoofing? They're doing an IP spoof.
Yeah,
they're pretending to be someone else. Well, yeah,
they are spoofing, and you know, I think they're in fuzzy territory in regards to that, you know, because I mean, they're falling under their mandate that they have the right to manage their network, and they consider this management, and other people disagree with them.
And then there's the common carrier status. Once you start filtering, then you're responsible for all the content that goes through.
And technically, you know, they're not preventing you from receiving files. You know, they're not restricting your download content. They're restricting your ability to share, which is probably the, you know,
it'd be curious to think of it. It'd be curious to think of it as they're not restricting your ability to hear what everybody else is saying. You're just not allowed to talk.
Yeah, so censorship. Yeah.
Which I guess is sort of in the Comcast business model, isn't it? Which is a little bit of a broadcast.
That was extremely inflammatory. I'm sorry about that, but you know,
I have Comcast knocking on your door.
Well, no, I'm not a Comcast customer. I don't know what they could do to me, but it's that was inflammatory. It shouldn't have gone to that extreme to prove a point.
Geek Speak on KUSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Stay with KUSP for Castle College this morning. Castle Cottage this morning at 11 a.m. on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You are listening to Geek Speak. We are now taking your calls with questions and comments of technology. The numbers are 476-2800, that's 476-2800, or toll free at 800-655-5877, that is 800-655-KUSP. Use the internet. Visit geekspeak.org, click on Contact Us. Geek Speak on KUSP is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley, offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. You're listening to Geek Speak. Filling in for Lyle Troxell, I'm Timothy Jordan. The geeks this morning are Miles Elam, Ryder Brooks, and Sean Cleveland. Please join our conversation. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free 800-655-5877 or use the internet. Visit geekspeak.org. Click on Contact Us. So, shall we take some calls, geeks?
Absolutely.
I'm feeling fantastic about it. So, on line one, we've got Victor. Oh, or we don't.
We do not.
We do not. Maybe I just can't.
The geeks are experiencing technical difficulty.
The geeks are experiencing technical difficulties.
Let's try the next call.
Tech support. Yeah.
I don't know that we have tech support in here. All right. Well, let's move on to some other news stories while I figure this out.
Okay. Sure. The first view of Google's Android mobile operating system have been seen in the world now.
This is the Google iPhone killer, or what is this?
I'm sure they'd love for it to be an iPhone killer, but I think it's more along the lines of a common operating system that's... Is it open source? I forgot whether Android was going to be open source or not. But generated by Google, the idea of trying to unify the different mobile platforms to have a common OS and one that was a bit more, let's say, hardy than the Symbian OS that's out there most of the time. Or the Windows, actually the Windows CE market is probably the bigger target.
Okay. So they give us screenshots? What do we get with
this? Yeah, so I'm seeing screenshots here, and a lot of it is looking... So much what I would expect from the iPhone, it's very much based upon a mobile platform. You have your icons for the browser and music and the like, but they're on your standard telephones or cellular phones. So it's not like the iPhone where it's a huge touchscreen. I'm still seeing, for example, the BlackBerry style where you have the keyboard on there, which I know, Sean, you seem to prefer the actually having a keyboard available.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tactile response, I think is, you know,
and being able to touch it and be able to feel the groove where the F key is, and
yeah, and actually, the F and the J key Research in Motion announced they might be making a touchscreen BlackBerry.
Oh.
Well, they didn't announce it, but there's talk that they might be making a touchscreen BlackBerry.
Ooh, touchscreen CrackBerry. I feel great about that. Hey, so I got the phones figured out.
Okay,
let's go ahead and take a call. Line four in Bonnie Doon. Dave, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
So, Dave, your wife is having a G4 iBook problem, something about a fan of death?
That's what I found out it was called online, and what the symptoms are is when we try and start it up, the screen is black, and the fan just goes on high speed, very loud. And before that, there were times when it would just turn off, just go dead, and we thought it was a battery until it started doing the loud fan on startup. And I found a website, Corey Arnold, coreyarnold.org/iBook, where he figured out that there's a defect in the soldering of a certain chip on the motherboard, and that if you wedge in a piece of rubber in the right spot, and you showed on the photograph circling what chip to stick a foam to, that and then you wedge it in between the board and the heat shield and the case, then it's supposed to solve the problem. And we took the iBook apart and put a piece of rubber in there and started it up, and sure enough, it worked. But it only worked for about an hour or an hour and a half, and then iBook went dead again. And so we opened it up and put some more rubber in, and then it still only lasts for about an hour. And I guess maybe it gets heated up and something expands.
Right, it does sound like a heating problem, which I'd worry about putting the rubber in there because you may be blocking some airflow.
Well, this is just a little speck the size of one chip.
Okay.
The foam is just, it's like a quarter of an inch square maybe.
Right, but the fan seems to me like a red herring. It's not the fan going off and having this go out. It does sound like you have a heat problem there.
And okay.
The chip is basically freaking out after it gets too hot, and then you end up with this feedback loop where the system thinks, oh, well, the chip is working really hard. I need to turn the fan up.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, it sounds like the type of thing that you would need a real repair shop to deal with.
So, yeah, one of the things, there were maybe on this website, there were maybe 100 people who had tried this, and probably three quarters of them or more, it worked fine and worked for some.
What about the other quarter?
I mean,
what's the not working mean? Did the laptop explode?
Okay, so the other quarter, either it wouldn't start, or they did something that I'm calling to ask you about. What they did was they found that the reason that the pressure was working on this chip is because there were bad solder joints on the other side of the board. And they talked about how you had to have microelectronics experience to be able to solder it with a special small tip soldering iron. And apparently there's even a class action lawsuit or a government investigation in Denmark because this is a known defect. But my real question, I guess, is if there's a place you think in Santa Cruz I could take it to if I show them which chip it is. Is there a place that for a reasonable charge can just solder the pins on this one chip?
Like I said, the only thing I can think of, and your best bet would be to head to an Apple repair shop.
Okay.
They're probably going to give you. Not necessarily one that's Apple branded, but something. It's people who deal with Apple laptops. They're
okay.
Probably going to be the most pragmatic. Probably going to give you the most honest answer about
Does
it.
Does Apple certify repair shops? Are there certified Apple repair shops?
There used to be. I don't know if there are anymore.
I remember seeing the sign before, but I haven't looked for
then
a while because the Apple
are,
stores
then, yeah.
are so big.
Personally, I'm thinking it's unlikely that someone's going to take on micro soldering on that level.
Yeah, you can't use just a soldering iron.
Right, yeah. Admittedly, but there may be people that have come across this so often that they've learned, maybe they bought
know
to say, look, here's a replacement motherboard and it's going to cost X amount of dollars and we'll deal
with
that.
We have a lab at NVIDIA that I take boards to get chips swapped out on, and I've watched them do it, and it takes very specialized hardware.
It does. It's not an easy thing to do. I think the consensus is really you got to take this somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Because you got to take the whole board out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anybody have a favorite Apple store, Apple shop in town?
So let me get this straight. That you put this rubber in and it's pushing the chip closer to the board is what you think is happening?
That's what they claim.
Is there metal on the other side of the chip?
Is there
a heat spreader?
Well, I don't know what's on the other side of the chip.
Because typically what happens is your chips overheat. And all you're doing is you're creating a better contact with whatever is drawing the heat off the chip, which is a heat spreader.
You see, I think what their theory was is that the chip is not making good contact with the printed circuit board.
That doesn't make any sense because the chip's going to be getting a certain amount of voltage, right? And the chip's either going to work or it's not.
So the fact that
the chip is working.
Well, I think we're talking about like thermal dynamics
sounds,
where
right.
things are
and,
expanding and contracting.
Exactly.
And really, I think we're just kind of like making stabs in the dark because we don't really know. But since you're in the area, Dave's Computers would be a great resource for you to go to in Santa Cruz.
Okay, I'll try there.
If you haven't cracked a laptop before. It's probably best not to do so now.
Well, he's already cracked it.
Oh, did he?
Oh no, we did it, and just by putting the pressure on the chip that was identified, we got the laptop. So instead of booting up black with the fan, it would boot up and run for an hour or two.
Yeah, and we applaud you for the initiative. At the same time, I really think at this point you need to go to the professional.
Okay. Well,
yeah,
thank you.
I don't know about sticking things in your computer and leaving them there. That just seems weird to me. Thank you for the call.
Thank you for the call.
Okay, bye.
All right, so let's get back to line one. Victor on line one, are you there, Victor?
Oh, goodness. Yeah, in this case, Lyle could have helped out, as he was saying, as the board gets hot, the bad solder connection fails. Putting a bit of rubber on the chip makes it work because it pushes the connections closer. That's the guy who has the most electronics experience among us.
I think it's a thermal issue. I bet if you just shut the notebook down and left it for an hour and then fired it back up, it would work because the chip is cooler.
Yeah.
I bet it's a bad thermal connection with something in the notebook that is supposed to be drawing the heat from the chip.
Either way, back up the data on that computer. All right, we've got another call here on line two. Steve.
Yes.
Steve, you have ISP throttling bandwidth?
I was just going to make some comments about what you were saying with regards to BitTorrent on Comcast and cable networks. And, without just being one person to fight, big telecom, the key phrase to look for if you're shopping around for ISP services is called the acceptable use policy. And that's really what governs what you're allowed to do on the network. And, I'll just put my plug and my vote in here. If you can get your ISP to have a great acceptable use policy that says you're buying the bandwidth, it's your pipe, you can put anything you want into it, you can take anything you want out of it, that's really the way to go. I would encourage people, to beat up your ISP into giving you a bandwidth that you buy every month that's yours to do with what you wish. And, read the acceptable use policies of ISPs before you shop. And if you're leaving your ISP because you don't like their acceptable use policy, then tell them so.
That is true. And, in fact, until about a week ago, Comcast acceptable use policy did not make any specific prohibitions against P2P. They have since amended it, like I said, about a week ago, mm-hmm. to say that. So that was really good advice. At the same time, we're finding that companies don't necessarily follow their own acceptable usage policy.
In the acceptable use policy, is there some sort of additive in there that says they can change it at any time?
Well, I mean, you're buying. I guess what you're buying with your monthly payment is a warranty of merchantability for a particular purpose, and if that is using peer-to-peer networks, and there's no prohibition in there, and they don't say we can change these terms at our whim, you might be able to say, well, then that means I'm not paying my bill this month. I don't know. I'm just one of those people who likes complete freedom on the internet. I like to smoke it unfiltered, and if anybody tries to say you can't do this on our network, then I say then it's time to switch networks. And I would encourage anybody and everybody who wants a freer internet to do that. Beat up your ISP if they don't like your traffic.
That's great.
You're
going
to vote with your feet.
Yeah. That's great advice. Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Thank
bye bye.
All right. Now, Victor, are you there?
Yeah.
Ah, finally got you on the line. Sorry about all the trouble. So, tell us your problem.
Okay, I have a Linksys Wireless G version 4.1 card, and I've recently installed Ubuntu Linux, and it doesn't work for it. And I've tried using NDIS or other emulation software to install the Windows drivers on it, but it just doesn't work for my card.
The NDIS wrapper doesn't work? And you're pretty sure you followed all the instructions?
Yeah, I actually looked online, and it said that my card was the exception, and it won't work.
And that's
if there are any other workarounds.
Yeah, going online and seeing that message that it's an exception and it's not going to work. Unfortunately, you may be out of luck until someone releases drivers for that. It may not even be Linksys's fault. They may be running a chip on their card that they don't have the source code to it. They don't own it, or at least the schematics for it to be able to release it. It may be a case you may need some other card.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. I mean, if you're looking online at the Linux community and they're collectively saying no go.
Now, on the bright side, a replacement card would probably cost you on the order of, like, say, $20. That there are cards that are out there that are compatible with Linux and with Ubuntu that are not that expensive.
Yeah, Newegg, I found this E-Link that was about $13.
Yeah, swap it out. You maybe have a Windows user that would mind trading with you that would work better. Or,
right, but unless you're a kernel hacker and have a fair amount of time on your hand and are a glutton for punishment, basically, it's probably a non-starter to get that wireless card to work with Ubuntu.
But I did find something. People got it to work using, apparently it uses a Raylink chipset or something, and Raylink makes drivers for Linux, but it says you have to debug the drivers or something, and I'm new to Linux, or you have to compile the drivers.
Right. It's
compiling drivers isn't as difficult as you would think, but it's not trivial.
It's not as difficult in terms of a series of processes, but you still have to have a level of knowledge, for example, what a compiler is, how to install a compiler, where it's supposed to go. So if you're not comfortable with it, I would say it'd be a lot easier for you to just buy a new card.
Do you have a local Linux users group?
Not that I know.
I'd check that out. Do you have like a university or college near you?
Oh, yeah.
So generally, most universities in this country will have like a Linux users group, and if you just take your computer to them and say, please fix this, often they're very receptive to do so. They'll have what they call build or install days, and you could probably just find an extra space on the table, and maybe they'll build that driver for you.
Oh. Okay. I'll try one of those things.
But you know, I mean, that's one of the problems still with Linux is getting drivers for hardware, especially new hardware. And I've particularly found wireless cards, getting drivers for wireless cards can be particularly difficult.
But at the same time, it's no longer true of drivers.
There have been
a couple of reports that are saying that it's easier to get drivers now for Linux than it is for Vista.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, obviously XP is still the granddaddy. It's going to work with everything, but... Yeah.
I don't know if that's necessarily a statement on Linux as it is on Vista, though, is it?
Fair enough.
All right. Thank you for calling.
Okay, thanks.
You were listening to Geek Speak. Filling in for Lyle Troxell, I'm Timothy Jordan. The geeks this morning are Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam, and Ryder Brooks. And let's go ahead and take some more calls, shall we? I'm excited to do so. Let's see here. On line 5, I think we have Charles. Charles, are you there?
Yeah, hey, thanks.
So something about a DVD issue.
Yeah, okay. So I'm a gamer, just got Call of Duty 4, thrilled, stick it in DVD drive, nothing happens. Okay, go to their website. I'm not the only one who has this problem. I have this really old, generic DVD drive. You know, that built this computer, and I cannot find drivers for it. Really, nothing there. Not too keen on updating my BIOS. I don't really want to feel like doing that right now. Know how, but not really.
So, in terms of upgrading the firmware, it seems like it would be a pain.
Yeah. Okay.
If it's not working in a lot of people's drives, I would tend to think that it's the game company's responsibility. Plus, it's probably due to some type of copy protection they're trying to put
most
on the disk.
Likely.
Yeah, that's what I was guessing. So. Should I just try to get them to send me like another one? Like
so, can you not load the software, or is it's an issue where you can't play the game?
The drive, and the drive does not recognize the disk.
Okay,
so right. You can't even initialize to mount the disk.
Okay. Yeah, and I'm not sure if this is related, but right after I did that, tried that disk, my drive it now just randomly opens when I'm using the computer. Just whenever, doesn't matter if there's something in it or not, it'll just open.
Just randomly.
I mean to open
totally randomly.
I'm sorry, to open up the case of the DVD player or open up the drive?
No,
to
the DVD drive will just open up. The slider will come out. And it'll just stay there.
This is after a reboot as well?
Yeah, after a reboot. I tried the disk 3 days ago and I'm still doing this now.
That's weird.
It is really weird.
What operating system are you running?
I am on XP SD2.
And what's the name, just as a curiosity, what's the name of the company that manufactured this disc?
Activision.
This was Call of Duty, you said?
Yeah, Call of Duty 4.
Funky, yeah. I don't know what to say about the drive ejecting issue.
Right. I mean, obviously a solution would be getting a newer drive, but that doesn't seem like a fair and equitable position. Especially if a lot of people are having this problem, it seems like the onus would be on the game company, but I don't know of any easy way beyond organizing a protest or a class action lawsuit to get them to change that.
I mean, and you're going to have a, you know, personally, you're anything that they deliver to you outside of a replacement disc is not going to work until you do something to address your drive not being able to read it.
Yeah, that or trying to upgrade the firmware, actually biting the bullet and going through all that's required.
And it's not that hard, provided you can find the manufacturer. Is this just a DVD-ROM or is it a burner as well?
It's a DVD-ROM.
Okay.
Yeah, you might have to pull it out and look at the label on the top to get the model number.
Yeah. You might have a little bit more difficulty flashing any firmware on a DVD-ROM, too. I typically see it more frequently with DVD burners that they make it convenient to flash it.
Right, because they want the new media to be supported.
Yeah. So what's the bottom line? What's his next step?
Well, your cheapest solution is probably just go get another DVD-ROM drive. I mean, you can pick one up for $20.
Yeah.
So instead,
I mean, if you're really jonesing to play the game.
I have. Well, I know I'm in this for a while. So.
Or, you know, there's a possibility that it's just, you know, a temporary thing. And if you can swap a drive out and load it up and you can, if you have enough hard drive space, there's actually websites out there like Game Copy World where they have patches to turn off the CD checks. You know, so if you legitimately own the game, I don't think it's a big deal for you to install that patch that no longer requires you to actually have the DVD in the drive to play the game.
Right, but you'd still need to get the drive.
You'd need to temporarily, you know, get a different a DVD-ROM from a friend or something like that just to install it.
Yeah, so the bottom line comes down to you can either spend the time to do this or buy a new drive. Either way, it's going to be, you know, it's either going to be time or money.
Yeah.
Really, just how much is your time worth to you?
Exactly.
But isn't that computers in general? It's time or money.
I guess it really is. Hey, thanks for calling.
Okay, thank you.
All right, let's take Cindy in Santa Cruz. Cindy, you're there.
Hi there.
So your laptop is going willy-nilly. What does that mean?
Willy-nilly. Well, I'm on some sort of intranet. I'm a home, just my own home use computer, and somehow I'm on the intranet where there are other users using my system. I don't really quite what this all means. I'm sort of a neophyte on all this.
Okay. Well, intranet refers to a local network, typically.
Yeah, intranet.
Yeah.
Well, it's like multiple users.
Mm-hmm. Are you using wireless or a cable provider?
AT&T.
Now, something here in this description is actually making me a little nervous. You were saying homepage changes, machine out of control. Randomly, your homepage will change?
Sometimes, yeah.
What does it change to?
Well, and then there's like imitation Microsoft site.
That's what it changes to. You've got some malware on your system that you need to get cleaned up.
Yeah.
You need to have like some antivirus. Do you have an antivirus software package installed?
Last time I took it in, they put on a SpyBot, which it was kind of strange. I got it back and it seemed like it still had all the same problems, but it had this program SpyBot, which is very complicated. And likes to, I don't know what it's doing, but it's doing a lot of work, and it keeps showing me things that I'm supposed to delete, and yet those are basic functions for opening up certain programs.
They probably installed a monitor service for the SpyBot program that is detecting things as they come up, and they're probably prompting you to react to them to determine what you want to do.
And it gets really complicated when you do that, because sometimes it's doing something that it wants me to shut down something that I need to open up something else. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure. And I have AVG.
Antivirus Guard. Mm-hmm. Know what that is?
Yeah.
And
it's been so long since I've installed new virus protection software on my PC that I don't really know.
Well,
I keep mine
strictly
behind a firewall. So.
Her system's already infected. And from the sound of it, either the antivirus software has been disabled or is simply not detecting what's going on.
So I guess the first step is to back up all your data.
I don't really know how to do that, but I guess I'll have to learn.
Get an external drive or burn it to CD, but somehow everything precious on your machine you should have a copy of somewhere else before you start on this path. And then what's the next step, Geeks?
Wouldn't it bring that virus or malware with it when I do that?
Possibly, yeah.
It depends. Yeah. It depends on how the virus is transmitted. Sometimes it'll just be with the operating system, in which case you'll be okay. Sometimes it'll be embedded in, for example, Word document attachments or other types of files, in which case those would be in your backup.
Assuming this is a virus. I mean, malware is not the same thing as virus.
Chances are it's also, yeah, and chances are this is also code that's installed onto the operating system, not into your data files.
Yeah. Now, you know, I mean, it has been a while, but I've dealt with it several times. Pretty much back up the data, clean the machine, then clean your backed up data, and move forward with your life.
Or just re-back it up instead.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but cleaning the machine might involve, the reason I say the backup is cleaning the machine might involve deleting your system and reinstalling. Mm-hmm. And if you're uncomfortable with those steps, then maybe you should take the computer to a shop.
Yeah, I have to take it to a shop. I really don't know how to do those things. I spend so much time just trying to get one. I open up the computer, I try to do something, and man, I have to spend hours doing all kinds of other things to just try to settings back to where I can use them. Settings have been changed.
And when you go to the computer shop, you know, you might want to have a discussion with them about what they're installing and put an emphasis on you really don't want things that are going to confuse you and add difficulty to your day-to-day life.
Yeah.
You know, they should be able to recommend a set of antivirus and malware scanning software that can incorporate well into your day-to-day and not confuse you. You know,
One quick question. What do you think of, I bought this one program where you can talk to the computer instead of type. I forgot what it's called. I'm not in the house right now. I'm in the car. But I wanted to get this installed, but I can't do it.
We got to go.
That you're looking for voice to text. So just do a quick internet search. Just drag in Naturally Speaking. There's a number of great ones out there.
The one Naturally Speaking, I think.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Now, there's one thing that we wanted to mention before we move on to the next program here on the radio.
Yeah. A year from Tuesday is when the government will officially flip the switch from analog to digital. So on February 19th, 2009, we'll be going pure digital for television. And we had some callers ask if there's a government subsidy program that will help consumers upgrade from analog to digital TV. And yes, there is, but it's only for TV converters. It's an $80 subsidy. It's quite a bit of money, like $19 billion or something crazy. This first round, I don't think you have to prove that you... It's $990 million, sorry. The second round, you will have to prove that you only have over the air. So if you want to do it, I would do it soon. We'll have the link on our website with more information.
Mm-hmm. And I believe those coupons are running out, aren't they?
They are.
Yeah.
Hey, GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence, and he's used by permission. The geeks this morning were Miles Elam, Ryder Brooks, and Sean Cleveland. And answering the phones today was Rick Philman. Thank you all for your participation in GeekSpeak.
Glad to be here.
Yep. Bye-bye.
You just listened to another episode of GeekSpeak via our podcast. Would you do us a favor? Please go to your favorite podcasting index site, whether it be iTunes, Dig.com, Odeo, or another site, and write a review or give us a vote to let others know what you think about GeekSpeak. Thanks, that'd really help us out. GeekSpeak is supported by PreownedCar.com, PreownedCar.com, where anyone can post their vehicle for sale or browse to purchase a pre-owned car from other car owners. More information available at PreownedCar.com. This is Lyle Troxell for KUSP. Thanks for listening.